We're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 5th canto, 6th chapter, verses 18 to 19, 5th canto, 7th chapter, verses 1 to 14. Did Bharijan read the whole chapter, or did he finished? Okay, so what should I do? Anyway, I like this verse, so I'm going to read it again. So he finished, yeah, he didn't tell me, but so we'll just go over these verses very quickly. Since they're here. I like this 18th verse, so I'll read it. Rajan pachi gururalam bhavatam yajunam daivam priyakulapati kachaking karava astveva manga bhagavan bhajatam abanda moktin dadati kahichit svara bhakti yogam. Shukadev Goswami continued, my dear king, the Supreme Person, Mukunda, is actually a maintainer of all members of the Pandava and Yadu dynasties. He is your spiritual master, worshipful deity, friend, and director of your activities. To say nothing of this, he sometimes serves your family as a messenger or a servant. This means he works just as ordinary servants do. Those engaged in getting the Lord's favor attain liberation from the Lord very easily, but he does not very easily give the opportunity to render direct service unto him. Mukam karati vachalam angam langate giri yakipam paham bande shi guru utavinam om gyana tivilandasya gyanan shala shalakaya chakshamiritam yena tasmai shi guru venam. So what do you remember from Bharijan Prabhu's class? Yes?
Guru dynasty is more fortunate than other dynasties.
Guru dynasty is more fortunate than the other
most
dynasties.
Most fortunate is Vrindavan, Vrijabhasis.
And most fortunate is Vrindavan, Vrijabhasis. That's what you learned yesterday. Okay, yeah, there was one purport that he was a little bit... I think it's actually... No, it's not this one. Yes, it was a purport that talked about that. Okay, anything else? Yes?
The mind.
Oh, yeah, don't trust the mind, right?
Don't trust the mind.
Oh. Well, he didn't accept them. He didn't accept. He had them, but he didn't accept. Yeah. Right. Right. Yeah, that's a very important point. I think Chanakam Pandit also says that. Don't trust the mind. Anything else? Yes?
Prabhupada renounced his mystic powers.
Yes, he renounces mystic powers. Can you believe that? I think Srila Prabhupada did too, most of the time. Renounced his mystic powers. Anything else that you remember from yesterday? So I'll ask you a question. Krishna is full of six opulences. So, which opulence did Rishabhdev show of those six? Renunciation, yes, Vairagya. Prabhupada made a very interesting point, and this was on a lecture on the sixth verse of the sixth chapter, that the Lord, he has, as Krishna, he came, he had 16,000 palaces, 16,000 wives, so much opulence, so much wealth. But the same Krishna, as Rishabhdev, he was lying in the street in his stool and his urine. So this is how renounced the Lord is, that none of us, if we were in such a high position of wealth, could we ever imitate the Lord's renunciation, how renounced he was as Lord Rishabhdev. So Prabhupada said that there is something we should do. It's not that we have to lie in the road or do like the python, but we have to regulate our eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. That's what we have. That is our tapasya. He said, sleep as little as possible. Try to conquer over the mind. The mind is saying, sleep 17 hours. No, we should not do that. So Vairagya Vidya, this is the teaching of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So this is a wonderful, wonderful pastime. And my favorite purport, I had to read it again, is from the 16th verse of this chapter, where Prabhupada says, as a matter of principle, a devotee should read, speak, and hear Srimad Bhagavatam persistently 24 hours daily, if possible. That should be the motto of our class. And I think all of you are almost probably experiencing this with the intense schedule that you have to read, eat, and sleep Srimad Bhagavatam 24 hours persistently. So be persistent. Don't give up. I know it's a lot of reading, but Prabhupada says we should do this as a matter of principle, read, speak, and hear Bhagavatam 24 hours. So next year we'll have three classes a day to increase, because we have three cantos. No, I'm just joking. Don't worry. Next year it's 7, 8, and 9 canto, so our goal is 24 hours. So slowly we'll work. Of course, 10th canto, it could be 24 hours. Go to the places of Braj and hear the pastimes. 24 hours. This is because we have to finish, you know, the whole thing, and we can't finish it in just 2-4 hours in a day. Anyway, so this is what Prabhupada says. So this is the goal of the bhakti. Well, the bhakti vaibhav, we're a little bit slow, but bhakti vedanta, we should increase, double it, as Prabhupada used to say. And so this year we doubled it. Next year we should double it too. Anyway, these are just ideas. This is the recommendation of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Kirtaniya Sadahari. One should either chant Hare Krishna Maha Mantra or read Srimad Bhagavatam. So in your spare time, you can chant Hare Krishna, and thereby try to understand the characteristics and instructions of the Supreme Lord who appeared as Lord Rishabhdev, Lord Kapila, and Lord Krishna. And so this is what we're trying to do. This verse, verse 18, I'd also like to speak. I won't read the purport because I'm sure that you have already gone through it. But the most famous line of this purport, which Prabhupada quotes hundreds of times, Muktim dadati kahichit smana bhakti yogam. So this was one of Prabhupada's favorite quotes, this verse, the end of this verse. So we should be aware of that, even though we didn't have to memorize it. But in the purport, it struck me that Shukadev seems to be reading Parikshit's mind, that Parikshit is hearing about all these wonderful dynasties where the Lord appeared, but then he's thinking, well, what about the Kuru dynasty? You know, what about, this is what you brought up, the point you brought up. So, but Prabhupada says the devotees, they appeared in Kuru dynasty, so they are more glorious, because Krishna puts the devotees on a higher platform than he himself. And we know that when Krishna was living with the Yadus, he was always ready to leave. Every time Draupadi used to call for help, Govinda, Govinda, then Krishna would immediately come and help her. When she was being disrobed, and also when they were in the forest, Krishna came to help her. So this verse is also quoted in Chaitanya Charitamrita, and Prabhupada elaborates on that. We're having some technical problems today. And also, this verse is quoted in Nectar of Devotion in relationship to one of the qualities of pure devotional service, which is which quality? No. Sudurlabha, yes. We have our Nectar of Devotion teacher here. Sudurlabha. 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 This is 1135 in Nectar of Devotion. Two reasons why devotional perfection is very difficult to attain. I'll sing the verse. It's Sada Naukarana Sangaira Labya Suchirarapi Havinacha Svedi Ti Tita Sasyat Sudurlava. Two reasons why devotional service is rare. One of the reasons is given in this verse. Krishna does not easily give devotional service. And there's another reason. Does anybody know Nectar of Devotion teacher? That's it. Unless we're attached to Krishna, then you cannot attain devotional perfection, even if you render devotional service for a long time. Now, these are the two reasons why devotional service is rare. And this is a verse from Nectar of Devotion. And then another verse is quoted in Nectar of Devotion, Gyanata Sulabha Muktir Bhuktir Yagyadi Punyata Seyam Sadhana Sahasra Hari Bhakti Sudurlabha. By cultivating philosophical knowledge, you can understand his spiritual position and be liberated. By performing sacrifice and pious activities, one can achieve sense gratification. in a higher planetary system. A devotional service of the Lord is so rare, even by executing hundreds and thousands of such sacrifices, one cannot attain it. So this is the rareness. Yes, Sankirtan.
Is it okay to ask a question?
Maybe. Yeah. Depends on the question.
Why don't you go to text 16 again in the purport?
You want to quote text 16?
That's your favorite purport.
My favorite purport. Uh-huh.
It says one can attain perfection simply by explaining the instructions.
Acha.
I wonder, because me, like myself, doing teaching, going through
yes.
daily or like a lot of speaking, and often we don't speak on past time, we speak on other instructions.
Instructions, like, yes.
So I wonder how far, what includes the mercy area of getting the perfection by speaking. Because often we speak some Bhagavad Gita, like Rishabh Devi in the beginning.
Right.
How you just materialize it. So this.
The Sankirtans. Sankirtan's point is one can attain perfection simply by explaining the instructions. So Krishna says that in Bhagavad Gita. He says that. You know the verse?
Yeah, 1878.
No, before that. 1868, yeah. Yayiram paramam guyam madbhakte shavidasati. And for one who preaches this message of Bhagavad Gita, for him, devotional service is guaranteed and he comes back to me. So this is instructions. Gita is full of instructions. Sambandha Abhideya Prayojan. It's all there. But the purpose of the instructions is Prayojan and Abhideya Prayojan. So therefore, yes. So verse 19. Nityana Bhuta Nijalabha Nivritta Krishna Shayasya Tadachanaya Chirasupta Buddhe Lokasya Nakaraya Payamatma Lokam Akyanama Bhagavate Shabayatasmai. Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Rishabhdev, was fully aware of his true identity, therefore he was self-sufficient, and he did not desire external gratification. There was no need for him to aspire for success, since he was complete in himself. Those who unnecessarily engage in bodily conceptions and create an atmosphere of materialism are always ignorant of their real self-interest. Out of his causeless mercy, Lord Rishabhdev taught the self's real identity and the goal of life. We therefore offer our respectful obeisances unto the Lord, who appeared as Lord Rishabhdev. So the summary, this verse is a summary, how the Lord is complete. He didn't need to perform austerities, but he acted just to teach the yogis how to give up the body. And he taught the real identity of the soul. So now we'll go on to the seventh chapter, Activities of King Bharat. So this is the first chapter on Bharat Maharaj, and chapters, we'll hear about Bharat Maharaj from chapters 7 through 14 of Srimad Bhagavatam. And the first three will be his life, 7, 8, 9. We'll go through them very quickly. Today, now chapter 7, this afternoon chapter 8, tomorrow chapter 9. And then tomorrow afternoon we'll start his instructions, or his discussion with Maharaj Rahugana. So we'll be going fairly fast. So chapter 7, Shukadev Goswami continued speaking to Maharaj Parikshit. My dear King, Bharat Maharaj was a topmost devotee. Following the orders of his father, who had already decided to install him on the throne, he began to rule the earth accordingly. When Bharat Maharaj ruled the entire globe, he followed the orders of his father and married Panchajani, the daughter of Vishvarup. Verse 2. Just as the false ego creates the subtle sense objects, Maharaj Bharat created 5 sons in the womb of Panchajani, his wife. These sons were named Sumati, Rashtrapita, Sudarshan, Avarana, and Dhumraketu. Formerly, this planet was known as Ajanabha Varsha, but since Maharaj Bharat's reign, it has become known as Bharat Varsha. Maharaj Bharat was a very learned and experienced king on this earth. He perfectly ruled the citizens, being himself engaged in his own respective duties. Maharaj Bharat was as affectionate to the citizens as his father and grandfather had been. Keeping them engaged in their occupational duties, he ruled the earth. So here we have a little Sanskrit that's important. Pita Mahavat, exactly like his grandfather. Uru Vatsala Daya, affectionate to the citizens. So he's very affectionate. At the same time, Sve Sve Karmani Swatarmam, he was encouraging them to perform their duties in Varnashram Dharma. So at the end of the purport, Srila Prabhupada says, one must work as a Brahman Kshatriya Vaishya or Shudra on the material path, and on the spiritual path, everyone should act as Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, or Sannyasi. Although formerly the government was a monarchy, all the kings were very affectionate toward the citizens, and they strictly kept them engaged in their respective duties. Therefore, society was very smoothly conducted. So people were happy. People are happy when they have something to do. Just like my son, he has nothing to do, so he thinks, so why should I wake up? I don't know what should I wake up for? I have nothing to do. Of course, when he thinks of something to do, then he wakes up and he does something. So this is people, they don't know what to do. Prabhupada said, idle mind is the devil's workshop. So therefore, the duty of the king is to give people something to do. The duty of the manager, give people something to do. So Lord Ram, he also ruled in the same way. There's a verse, 9th canto, 10th chapter, verse 50, describes his rule very, very similar to the rule of Bharat Maharaj. It says, Praja svatarma nirata varnashrama gunanvita jugopa pitivat ramo menire pitaram chitam. Being pleased by the full surrender and submission of Bharat, Lord Ramchandra accepted the throne of the state. He cared for the citizens exactly like a father, and the citizens, being fully engaged in their occupational duties of Varna and Ashram, accepted him as their father. So Prabhupada explains that this is the relationship between citizens and government. It should be like this, that the king should be like the father, very, very affectionate, and the sons should be well trained, and when they're well trained, then they're obedient to the king, and then he takes very nice care of them, just like his own children. And if we study Ram Lila, we'll see how affectionate he is, even much more so than his own family. Just by the words of some dobi, he banished his wife Sita. So what government official would do that? Banish their wife just on the words of some insignificant person. So Ram was like that. That he lived the life of a great king and he showed the example. And he established the Varnashram Dharma. So does anybody remember from third canto? Here Prabhupada is saying that we should act brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, sannyas. So there are four qualities of these four ashrams. And these four qualities are the four pillars of religious life. So these four ashrams are supposed to uphold four of these four pillars of religious life. Does anybody, Sankirtan, you remember? Yeah, well, what's the good quality that they're supposed to uphold?
Cleanliness,
yeah.
But they're linked.
Linked with, yeah, that's the opposite. The opposite, yeah. I'm looking for the good side, the good side, you know. So the brahmacharis, they're supposed to uphold the pillar of cleanliness. And the grihasthas, let's have somebody else. What?
Charity.
Right. And the vanaprastas? Tapasya, austerity. And the sannyasis? Satyam, truthfulness. So these are the four qualities, shocham, daya, tapa, and satya. Do we have anybody today? You're going to give him up when... Does he want to come here? Is he sleeping? Okay, he can... Yeah, okay, now's the time. He can come. Yes?
In the third canto also, instead of shaucha, it says vidya.
Oh, vidya, yes. Vidya in third canto. And actually, in first canto, it's shaucham. So, yes. So, both should be there also for the brahmacharis, vidyam and shaucham. Prabhupada sometimes would visit the brahmachari ashram. And he would comment on different things. So therefore, yes, both that vidyam is also there. Education In third canto, it's education. But the grihasthas and vanaprasthas and sannyasis are the same. Only the brahmacharis differ a little bit. So we see also in Bhagavad Gita the quality in 16th chapter, quality of brahmacharya swatya. Swatya, yes, study of the Vedas. Swat, I can't say it properly. Swadhyayam. Yes, okay. So here, we're going to read verse 5. How did Bharat Maharaj perform his duties? We're going to see a similarity here between Bharat Maharaj and King Nabi. So verse 5, with great faith, King Bharat performed various kinds of sacrifice. He performed the sacrifices known as Agnihotra, Darsha, Purnamasa, Chaturmasya, Pashu Yagya, wherein a horse is sacrificed, Soma Yagya. Who is this god? Damodar? Damodar. Okay. Soma Yagya, the Lord has appeared in our sacrifice. Wherein a kind of beverage is offered. Sometimes these sacrifices were performed completely and sometimes partially. In any case, in all the sacrifices, the regulations of Chaturhocha were strictly followed. In this way, Bharat Maharaj worshipped the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So what is the common factor between Maharaj Bharat and Maharaj Nabi? They perform sacrifice, that's one. What's the other? Yes? Yes. Their purpose was to please Lord Vishnu. So notice the first, practically first word in the purport, with great faith. So did he have faith in the demigods and in getting the benefits of the sacrifice? Was that Bharat Maharaj's faith? Getting the Soma Ras, going to heaven for Chaturmasya? What was his faith, actually? Supreme Lord, yes. So Prabhupada is going to comment on this extensively in these purports. So in this purport before the quote, now Prabhupada is always, whenever we hear anything about demigods and all different kind of sacrifice, Prabhupada gives us a warning. So here he says, before the quote, in the present age, animal sacrifices are forbidden. It's stated by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Ashvamedam gavalambam sanyasam palapaitikam devarena sutotpatim kala panchavivar jayet. In this age of Kali, five acts are forbidden. Offering of a horse in sacrifice, offering of a cow in sacrifice, acceptance of the order of sannyas, offering of oblations of flesh to the forefathers, and a man's begetting children and his brother's wife. So why are these five sacrifices forbidden in this age of Kali? What's that? Okay, people will take advantage, and they have. They have done that. Yes, they have, and that's why Buddha had to come. Buddha had to come to stop the sacrifice of animals, yes. Right. That's what Prabhupada says. There's no scarcity of expert brahmanas who are able to take responsibility. What, any other reasons why we don't do this in Kali Yuga? Why not sannyas? Prabhupada gave sannyas. Bhaktisiddhanta gave sannyas. Why is it forbidden in Kali Yuga? Karma sannyas? Oh, okay, so that kind of sannyas, no karma sannyas, where you stop all your activities. But Vaishnava sannyas is different. Body, mind, and words. Okay. So Prabhupada says, in the absence of these, the Sankirtan Yagya is recommended. Yagyai Sankirtana Prayaya Janti Sumedasha. After all, sacrifices are executed to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Yagyartha Karma. Such activities should be carried out for the Supreme Lord's pleasure. In this age of Kali, Supreme Lord and His incarnation, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, should be worshipped with His associates by performance of Sankirtan Yagya, congregational chanting of Hare Krishna Mantra. This process is accepted by intelligent men. Yagyai Sankirtana Prayai Yajantihi Sumedasha. So twice, Prabhupada quoted the exact same line. The word Sumedasha refers to intelligent men who possess very good brain substance. So all these fruitive activities that Bharat Maharaj was doing, it's not something a devotee normally does. You don't do all these ritualistic sacrifices. But the reason he did it is because he was worshipping the Lord. It was his duty. He was doing Varnashram. He was engaging everyone else in Varnashram. So he had to do his, and that's what the kings are supposed to do. But actually he was worshipping Krishna. And he had very special consciousness, just like his grandfather. Actually, he's compared to his grandfather in so many ways, that he was affectionate to the citizens, but he had the same consciousness of only thinking of Krishna, no matter even if he was doing all these sacrifices. So I have something here that I'd like to read to you from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. It's his final instructions before he left this world. It's just a small, small part of it, but it's quite interesting. He makes the same point that Srila Prabhupada makes in the purport about Harinam Sankirtan. And this is the only way to please the Lord in this age. But he makes it in a very personal way. So just remember now, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta is ready to leave his body. And he's saying these things. These are his final instructions to his disciples. So this is just a part of this, and part of it I'll read in another purport. So here, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta says, "This body is like the aging cow, which in ancient times was meant to be offered up in sacrifice." So this is his mood when he's leaving his body. "Only we desire to offer the body to Krishna in the sacrifice of the holy name, established by Sri Krishna Chaitanya and his associates. We do not seek to become heroes performing great works or religious deeds," that's like these sacrifices of Bharat. "Our true being and our identity is that of a speck of dust at the lotus feet of Sri Rupa Prabhu, life after life. The stream which flows from Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur will never be dammed up. Remember this and vow to double your efforts to fulfill Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's desires. Amongst you are many capable and worthy individuals. We seek nothing for ourselves. Our only motto is Adadanas Chinam Dantaditam Yache Puna Puna Shimarupa Parambhoja Tulisam Janma Janmani. Taking grass between my teeth, I pray repeatedly I may become a speck of dust at Sri Rupa Goswami's lotus feet, birth after birth." So this was his mood, that his sacrifice, he was going to sacrifice his body in the sacrifice of Harinam. So we should have this mood, that this is our sacrifice. It's the only sacrifice we can do in this age of Kali. But now we're reading about sacrifice, so Prabhupada is always going to bring us back to Harinam Yajna. That this is our, though he's doing these sacrifices, but this is our sacrifice for Kali Yuga. So verse 6, let's hear how, in what consciousness Bharat Maharaj performed these sacrifices. "After performing preliminaries of various sacrifices, Maharaj Bharat offered the results in the name of religion to the Supreme Personality of Godhead Vasudev. In other words, he performed all the yajnas for satisfaction of Lord Vasudev Krishna. Maharaj Bharat thought, since the demigods were different parts of Vasudev's body, he controls those who are explained in the Vedic mantras. By thinking in this way, Maharaj Bharat was freed from all material contamination, such as attachment, lust, and greed. When the priests were about to offer the sacrificial ingredients into the fire, Maharaj Bharat expertly understood how the offering made to different demigods was simply an offering to the different limbs of the Lord. For instance, Indra is the arm of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and Surya, the sun, is his eye. Thus, Maharaj Bharat considered the oblations offered to different demigods were actually offered unto the different limbs of Lord Vasudev." So he was aware the demigods, they are the via media to the Lord. And even though he was reciting Om Namo Shivaya, Om Shivaya Swaha, Indra Swaha, so, you know, how they do those mantras, still he was thinking, this is for Krishna. Although I'm saying the demigod's name, this demigod is a part of Krishna, and he's like the tax collector, and he's taking it to Krishna for me. So this was his consciousness. He understood their limbs of the Lord. So the question comes, Prabhupada asked the question in the purport. Since he was such a great pure devotee, then why did he do these demigod sacrifices? We're not supposed to worship the demigods. We're supposed to worship Krishna. And he knew that. He was a pure devotee. So why did he do it? Yes. Mm-hmm. And there's another reason also. Yeah. Yes, his duties. The first sentence of the purport. Prabhupada says, Supreme Personality of Godhead says, as long as one does not develop pure devotional service of shravanam, kirtanam, hearing and chanting, one must carry out his prescribed duties. Where does Krishna say that? In Bhagavad Gita. 335 and 1847. Yes. Okay, better to do your duty imperfectly than to do another's. But what about this point about as long as you don't develop pure devotional service, shravanam, kirtanam, hearing and chanting, you must carry out your prescribed duties. What about that point? Where does Krishna say that? As long as you cannot...
Sequence,
yes. That's what I was thinking of. The sequence in the 12th chapter... where he goes through everything and he says, you know, think of me. If you can't do that, then okay, do the bhakti yoga process. If you can't do that, work for me. Yeah. Aktuma yogataha. Oh, okay. Yes, yes, yes. Hey, that's very good. That's 5-7, right? Or 6-6, 5-6. Fifth chapter, sannyasa is 5-6, I think. Sanyasastu mahabaho dukam aptuma yogata. Yoga yukto munir brahma nachirena nigachiti. So one who is actually yoga yukto, he is muni, he's brahma, munir brahma, nachirena. Very quickly, he comes to me. Yeah, that's a good one. So if you take sannyas, it will be a cause of lamentation, it will be a cause of unhappiness if you're not linked to Krishna. Yoga yukto. That's a nice verse. Okay, so Krishna has said... Also? 6-1. Anashita karma phalam karyam karma karotiya lipyatenas pap... No, so, nas... There's two that start like that. Nas... Sa sanyasi sa yogi cha nani ragnir na chakya. Okay.
How is it relating to demigods?
Yeah. No, I wasn't relating to demigods. I was relating to the first sentence of the purport. Oh, so your question is, how does this all relate to demigods? Because he was worshipping the demigods, and that is part of prescribed duties of a king. The king, even if you read Krishna book, Krishna was worshipping Surya and when he got up in the morning and... Yes, this is Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam throws out all of that. So Bhagavatam is higher concept, yes. Better to worship, whether... And he's actually doing that, but he's doing it by worshipping the demigods.
It seems like the scenario is that people are very much habituated for doing the Vedic
ritual. Yeah, well, that he lived in that time. And now, but see... It says in that verse that he was engaging the citizens in their varnashram duties. Now, what kind of king would he be if he had said, you have to do that, and he didn't do it?
Varnashram.
But then again, he was giving the example that how you do your varnashram for the pleasure of Krishna. So he was giving the perfect example. Yes. Upasakanda.
He was worshipping the devas as part and parcel of the Virat Purush.
Yes, part and parcel of Virat Purush.
The Virat is not different from Krishna, so in that sense.
Okay. So let's go to the end of paragraph 1. Prabhupada gives a very nice analogy that how he was seeing the demigods. Near the end of paragraph 1, if we massage a person's legs, we do not really serve the legs, but the person who possesses the legs. All the demigods are different parts of the Lord, and if we offer service to them, we actually serve the Lord himself. Demigod worship is mentioned in Brahma Samhita, but actually the shlokas advocate worship of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Govinda. So if you're preaching in a country where there's heavy demigod worship, then you can Brahma Samhita is very nice. They like that. So you can help them in their worship of demigods. You just have to, when I was in Malaysia years and years ago for visa, we went to Kuala Lumpur, I think, that time. And there are people, they worship the demigods. So, of course, the question always comes up, well, what about all my demigods? And they have Krishna. I said, yeah, well, if you want to make Ganesh happy, then you put Krishna over him. And then, because he's always holding Krishna's feet on his tusks. So then you'll really get the benefit of worshiping Ganesh if you want to really please. And then I quote the verse from Brahma Samhita. I say, oh, really? We didn't know. So you quote from Brahma Samhita because it tells about all the different demigods and how they are under the control of Govinda. Govinda Mari Purisham, just like this one.
He holds on his tusks or his head? Because the English word there is complicated.
Acha. Yeah, I don't know. I have to look. I don't know the Sanskrit. But Tumuli.
Tumuli.
It's tusks. Yeah. No, tusks. Tumuli. It's tusks. Yeah. No, I don't. I get confused between English and Sanskrit because I've been here so long. I don't know. Tumuli, is it English? I don't know. Who's from England? Is tumuli an English word? A Latin word, okay. Not English. Tumuli. Okay, it's not an English word.
It says in the dictionary it's an artificial mound.
Tumuli.
Like a hill.
A hill.
So I think it's in the elephant's head there are two.
Oh, acha. It's something in his head. Yeah, they translate it as tusks. Srila Prabhupada, or the translations that I've seen. Anyway, let's go on here. Whether it's tusks or head, he carries Krishna's feet there. Doesn't matter which where. Maybe sometimes here, sometimes there. Give a change. So let's see, how do we worship Durga? Shisti siti palaya sadhana shaktireka chaye vayasa bhuvanani vipatti durga icharupama piyasya chacheshate sa govindamari purushantamaham majami. Following the orders of Shri Krishna, Goddess Durga creates, maintains, and annihilates. Shri Krishna also confirms the statement in Bhagavad Gita, maya tyakshena prakriti suyate sacharacharam. Material nature is working under my direction, O son of Kunti, and it is producing all moving and unmoving beings. We should worship the demigods in that spirit. Because the goddess Durga satisfies Krishna, we should offer respects to goddess Durga. Because Lord Shiva is nothing but Krishna's functional body, we should therefore offer respects to Lord Shiva. Similarly, we should offer respects to Brahma, Agni, and Surya. So that's how the devotee worships the demigods. He sings Brahma Samhita every day and meditates on how the demigods are serving Lord Krishna and pleasing Krishna. So then the last paragraph, an important point by Srila Prabhupada. Kings like Maharaj Ambarish and many other Rajarshis who are pure devotees of the Lord simply pass their time in the service of the Supreme Lord. When a pure devotee executes Samat service through the agency of another person, he should not be criticized, for his activities are meant for satisfaction of the Supreme Lord. A devotee may have a priest perform some karmakanda, and the priest may not be a pure Vaishnava. I don't know where this is, somewhere in the purport. But because the devotee wants to please the Supreme Lord, he should not be criticized. I don't think this is the end of the purport, but it's somewhere in that huge purport. So this is Bhagavatam. Srila Prabhupada is trying to shape our mentality so we don't criticize, so we don't have misconceptions that we don't worship the demigods, but we don't criticize people who are worshiping, and we try to get them into devotional service. We try to include them. So the consciousness is most important factor. And so how was Srila Prabhupada actually doing? Of course, Prabhupada was a pure Vaishnava. So how was he actually doing something like this? He was performing some rituals, and people misunderstood that Prabhupada was performing these karmakanda rituals, and they criticized him. Anybody know? I think we mentioned it in a previous class.
Social
conventions. Yeah. Oh, Krishna Balaram temple, okay. Right. Okay. Is that what you had in mind?
Marriage ceremonies.
Yeah, that's what I had in mind, that he, sannyasi, was performing marriage ceremonies. Of course, we don't recommend that you imitate Srila Prabhupada and performing, if you're a sannyasi, and perform marriage ceremonies. So in this morning's class, it was interesting because Mukunda Datta Prabhu was also talking about demigod worship, and he brought up the point that the good thing about it is at least the people who worship demigods, they have the personal conception in mind. That's a good point about demigod worship, and they accept the authority of the Vedas. So I told this story last year, for those of you who weren't here, who wasn't, yes, a few weren't here, and those who forgot the story, will revive your memory, that not all worshippers of the demigods were like Bharat Maharaj. That we have some examples of, there was one life member in Delhi who was worshipping Krishna. I don't know if this is a life member, and it was told by one life member maker that this one man, he was worshipping Krishna, but then Krishna didn't give him his material opulences fast enough. He wasn't giving him. So then he decided, okay, I'm going to worship Durga instead. So on his altar he had Krishna, Durga, so many demigods. And he was offering incense to Durga, and the incense was going to Krishna. He was offering, but it wasn't going to Durga, and he got really upset that the incense was going towards Krishna. So he stuffed some cotton in Krishna's nostrils so Krishna wouldn't get the incense and Durga would get it. So then that night he had a dream, and Krishna came to him in the dream and he said, oh, I'm very pleased with your worship. He says, what? Why are you pleased? I stuffed up your nostrils. He said, at least you think I'm a person. We have a personal relationship. So when we go into seventh canto, then you'll understand this point that, you know, any way you relate with Krishna, kama, dvesha, anger, envy, lust, any way you relate with Krishna, it's good. It's really good. And Prabhupada says, if you have some relationship with Krishna, even like Shishupala, then, you know, it's very good. And he quotes the verse, apichet saracharo manyate, what is, how does it go? Piche saracharo? Bhajate mam ananyabhak. So even if you worship me in a fallen way, if you do the most abominable things, still considered a sadhu. So even the demons are considered sadhu by Krishna. And he brings them back, fallen devotees. These are fallen devotees. So verse 7. In this way, being purified by ritualistic sacrifices, the heart of Maharaj Bharat was completely uncontaminated. His devotional service unto Vasudev, Lord Krishna, increased day after day while he was doing demigod worship. Lord Krishna, the son of Vasudev, is the original personality of Godhead, manifest as Super Soul, Paramatma, as well as the impersonal Brahman. Yogis meditate upon localized Paramatma situated in the heart. Gyanis worship impersonal Brahman as Supreme Absolute Truth. And devotees worship Vasudev, Supreme Personality of Godhead, whose transcendental body is described in the Shastras. His body is decorated with Shivatsa, Koshtubaju, flower garland. His hands hold the conch shell, disc, club, and lotus flower. Devotees like Narada always think of him within their hearts. So we can understand now what is going on in the mind of Bharat Maharaj. Although he is performing all these demigod worship, within he's worshipping Krishna. So this is we have to learn. End of the purport. Srila Prabhupada says, Paramatma is situated in the hearts of all living beings. He has four hands, which hold four symbolic weapons. All devotees who think of Paramatma within the heart worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead as the temple deity. You understand that statement? If by worshipping, what I got from this is that if you worship the deity in the temple, you're worshipping Paramatma in the heart. And in the early books of Prabhupada, I think in early Bhagavad Gita, they had a picture. They had on the one side, you know, like a split-level picture. On the one side, you have the yogi, and he's meditating on Paramatma. On the other side, you have the pujari doing puja to the deities. So this was what Prabhupada seems to be saying here. They also understand the impersonal features of the Lord and his bodily rays, the Brahman effulgence. So truth is appreciated in different ways by different angles of vision. I was discussing with Ram Baru, she's doing her PhD on the Jain, comparing Jain cosmology and our cosmology, Vedic cosmology. So they have a lot of very similar ideas that we do, 14 planetary systems. But then when it comes to universal form, they say, oh, that's mythology. But their idea is just like a childish picture of the universal form. They have like an octagon shape for the head, and then they have like another shape for, she says, they say his arms are like this. And then so they have just, their universal form is just like an octagon and then a shape like this. And that's their idea. So it's like from a great distance, you may think that's what the universal, that's what the person looks like. So it's like this, we're seeing, if you're seeing from a very great distance, then you just see a mist covering, like if you're looking at a mountain from a distance, you may just see a mist covering it. If you get closer, you see, oh, there's a mountain with clouds. And if you get closer, you see the herbs, you see the people on the mountain. So this is different ways to see the absolute truth, Advaita Gyan. But it is Advaita Gyan. There is only one absolute truth. So in Adi Lila, chapter 1, verse 3, there is a verse which describes these different ideas or concepts of the absolute truth. Yadadvaitam vamapanishadi jadapyasya tanupa yadmantaryami purushaiti sasham savibhava sadaisha japurno yaiha bhagavan sasayamayam achetanya kishta jagati paratattam paramiha. What the Upanishads describe as impersonal Brahman is but the effulgence of his body. The Lord known as Supersoul is his localized plenary portion. Lord Chaitanya is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna himself, full of six opulences. He is the absolute truth, and no other truth is greater than or equal to him. So only in the Vaishnava theology do we have the complete picture of the absolute truth. Whereas others, they have an incomplete picture, they have a partial picture. And when we speak to them about the form of the Lord, either they say, this is Maya, or this is mythology. So the Jains, they say this is mythology, the form of the Lord.
In the first place, they have a wrong leader.
Yeah, right. So they started with Arhat. Arhat. So what can they say? So anyway, this is quite interesting comparative study. Then there's another verse. Oh, why don't you give me some verses on the on this absolute truth and three features. Brahmeti, Paramatmeti, Bhagavaniti, Shaktiti. 1 to 11. There's another verse in this canto, 12th chapter, verse 11. It's very similar. So I'll sing that to you. Jnanam Vishuddham Paramartamekam Anantaram Tva Bahir Brahma Satyam Patyak Vishantam Bhagavad Shakta Sangyam Yadavasudevam Karaya Varanti. What is the absolute truth? It is that non-dual knowledge is the ultimate truth, devoid of contamination of material qualities, gives us liberation, one without a second, all-pervading, beyond imagination. First realization is Brahman, then Paramatma Supersoul realized by the yogis who try to see him without grievance. This is the second stage. And finally, full realization of the same supreme knowledge realized in Supreme Person. All learned scholars describe Supreme Person as Vasudev, cause of Brahman, Paramatma, and others. So these are the philosophical truths that were being realized by Bharat Maharaj during his worship. These are his realizations. We are reading about Bharat Maharaj's realizations. So now we'll hear about his life. Verse 8, destiny fixed the time for Maharaj Bharat's enjoyment of material opulence at 1,000 times 10,000 years. Was that the same as Nabi or who? Priyavrat?
That was 11 are Buddhas.
11 are Buddhas. Billion. Okay, and how much was his?
This is 1 crore.
1 crore. Is that a million?
10 million.
10 million, okay. Not quite the same. When that period was finished, he retired from family life, divided the wealth he had received from his forefathers among his sons. He left his paternal home reservoir of all opulence and started for Pula Ashram, which is situated in Hardwar. Shalagram Shilas are obtainable there. Can you get Shalagrams? I had this question. Do you get Shalagrams in Hardwar? Yes.
It seems like it's not that Hardwar.
It's not the same Hardwar. Huh? It's in Nepal.
Pula Ashram is like near on the way Muktinath.
Yeah.
Okay,
it's up in Nepal, actually.
There is, even now, Pula Ashram is there.
Pula Ashram is there. Oh, okay. Well, Hardwar is the gate to Pula Ashram.
Maybe Hardwar is like another Hardwar.
Yeah. Yeah, it could be also like a... Anyway, we're just speculating. But Hardwar is also called the gateway to the Himalayas. Haridwar.
The gate of the Himalayas.
Yes, the gateway to the Himalayas. Okay, so that's what we heard there, talking about Dayabhak. Verse 9, at Pulaha Ashram, the Supreme Personality of Godhead Hari, out of his transcendental affection for his devotee, becomes visible to his devotee, satisfying his devotee's desire. Purport. Now today we have a lot of nice verses from Brahma Samhita, so we're going to sing this one again, different one. Ramadi Mortishu Kalani Amena Tishan Nana Vatar Makara Bukhane Shikensu Krishna Sayam Samabhava Parama Kumanya Govinda Mati Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. Prabhupada says, the Lord is situated as Himself, Lord Krishna, Supreme Personality of Godhead, accompanied by His expansions, like Lord Ram, Baladev, Sankarshan, Narayan, Mahavishnu, and so forth. Devotees worship all these forms according to their liking. Remember third canto? According to your liking. And the Lord, out of his affection, presents himself as Archa Vigraha. And when we read the description of the universe, then we'll hear about in Jambudweep, there's 9 different varshas, and people are worshiping different incarnations of the Lord in those varshas. Like Bhumi Devi is worshipping Varaha, Vaivaswatamanu is worshipping Matsya, and Hanuman is worshipping Lord Ram. But the interesting thing about the worship is that they're all Archavigraha deities. And there is one purport where Prabhupada says that as in this world, they worship the Archavigraha. The Lord himself is not personally, but of course he's personally present, but as Archavigraha. So that's I found that as an interesting point. And all throughout his purports, Prabhupada is saying, it is the Archavigraha that we worship. This is our worship. He sometimes presents himself personally before the devotee out of reciprocation or affection. A devotee is always fully surrendered to the loving service of the Lord. The Lord is visible to the devotee according to the devotee's desires. He may be present in the form of Lord Ram, Lord Krishna, Lord Nrisimhadev, and so on. Such is the exchange of love between the Lord and his devotees. Verse 10, Pulaha Ashram is Gandaki River, which is the best of all rivers. Shalagram Shila, marble pebbles, purify all those places. On each and every marble pebble, up and down, circles like navels are visible. So does this little Damodar have a circle? The one before. How come he doesn't have a circle? It's not Shalagram? He's Shalagram. What happened to his circle? Has something else. Okay. Another sign is there. He probably has a circle, but we just can't see it. Okay. Verse 11. In the gardens of Pulaha Ashram, Maharaj Bharat lived alone and collected a variety of flowers, twigs and tosi leaves. So you've been to Pulaha Ashram, Patri?
No, I didn't.
You didn't go. Anybody's been to Pulaha Ashram? Okay, so we'll hear about it here. You don't have to go. He also collected the water of the Gandaki River as well as various roots, fruits and bulbs. With these he offered food to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudev, and worshipping him, he remained satisfied. In this way, his heart was completely uncontaminated, and he did not have the least desire for material enjoyment. All material desires vanished. In this steady position, he felt full satisfaction and was situated in devotional service. So here Prabhupada in the purport, the first thing Prabhupada says, everyone is searching after peace of mind. So here we're reading about someone who got it. Someone got peace of mind. Just living on the side of Gandaki River, offering, eating, getting flowers and twigs and tulsi leaves, offering water and roots, various roots, fruits and bulbs. So that must have been, if he was offering, this must have been what he was eating, the roots, the fruits and the bulbs. And he was satisfied. Can you imagine? So how to be satisfied, Prabhupada says, this is obtainable only when one is completely free from the desire for material sense gratification and engaged in devotional service of the Lord. So the main thing is the love and devotion. As long as one maintains material desires, he cannot be happy. As soon as one engages in devotional service, his mind is purified, he becomes fully satisfied. And then the verse Prabhupada gives, Savai Pungsam Parodamo Yato Bhaktir Hoksaje Hoituki Patiyata Yayatma Supersedity. So if you really want to be satisfied, what are the two characteristics of devotional service that must be there for you to actually gain full peace of mind and satisfaction? Haituki and Apratihata. Your service must be unmotivated and non-stop, 24 hours. So we are trying to bring you to this point of hearing, speaking and reading Srimad Bhagavatam for 24 hours a day. So last paragraph, these are the instructions given in Srimad Bhagavatam, the supreme Vedic literature. One may not be able to go to Bula Ashram, but wherever one is, one can happily render devotional service to the Lord by adopting the processes mentioned above. So Prabhupada is saying that actually we can solve all the problems of the world, we can have peace, if we just accept the instructions from Srimad Bhagavatam. I think in the beginning, in the first canto, he says something like that, that all political, all social, everything can be solved. The solution to all problems is Srimad Bhagavatam. So what is the main, what is the greatest need of human society? Talking about needs. What is lacking? What is missing in modern day society that Bhagavatam can give? Yes.
Understanding of one's duties.
Understanding of one's duties. Why is this the greatest need?
You should understand the common goal.
Yes.
They disperse their energies all over the place, but they don't focus on one goal.
Okay, what's the verse? There's a verse we learned last year that explains this concept. Yes. Yatataramula nisechanena. If you give water to the root of the tree, then the tree is nourished. So they want to give water to the leaves and the branches and they think this is the solution, but you have to give it to the root. So Prabhupada said it, that there is spiritual starvation. The soul is starving. The whole modern civilization, there is no soul. And that's why there is no peace. And so unless they feed the soul, they cannot be happy. There's a verse in Gita, something like this. I think, without... Okay. Nasukam naparam. Yes, if you don't accept the shastras, you reject the shastras, cannot have perfection or happiness or the supreme destination. So these are the verses. Also in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, in the late 60s, there's a sequence of verses about following the regulative principles and then you can have peace. Yes. 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 Ashantasya kutasa kama. Without peace, without happiness, how can you have peace? And how to be happy? You follow the regulative principles of freedom. So people, they don't understand this. They don't understand this concept. But Bharat Maharaj, he understood it. And he was experiencing great happiness in his very simple worship. Verse 12. That most exalted devotee, Maharaj Bharat, in this way engaged constantly in devotional service of the Lord, naturally his love for Vasudev Krishna increased more and more and melted his heart. Consequently, he gradually lost all attachment for regulative duties. Hairs of his body stood on end. All the ecstatic bodily symptoms were manifest. Tears flowed from his eyes. So much so, he could not see anything. Thus he constantly meditated on the reddish lotus feet of the Lord. At that time, his heart, which was like a lake, was filled with the water of ecstatic love. When his mind was immersed in that lake, he even forgot the regulative principle of regulative service to the Lord. So what we have on the board today is one of the symbols on Krishna's lotus feet. It's the fish, in case you can't recognize it. This is the fish symbol on Krishna's lotus feet. And this verse, when I read this verse, it quite reminded me of the significance of the fish on Krishna's lotus feet. Actually, there's four different meanings of this fish on Krishna's lotus feet. And one of the meanings is exemplified by this verse, the lake filled of ecstatic love, the lake in his heart, which is filled with ecstatic love. So I'll read these four different meanings, and so you can understand what is the significance. So it says here he was meditating on Krishna's lotus feet. That was his meditation. And from that meditation, he experienced these ecstatic symptoms. So one of the meanings of the fish in Krishna's lotus feet, just as a fish cannot live without water, similarly the surrendered devotee cannot live a moment without directly associating with his feet. That's one meaning. Actually, there's other meanings which just came to my mind, which I didn't write down here. One is that the fish is a symbol of Cupid also, and it's Cupid's flag of surrender. That now Krishna is there, Cupid cannot, material desires are finished. Cupid cannot stay. Cupid means material lusty desires. So then the second meaning, it shows all the most cherished desires and longings of those who go to Krishna's feet will be fulfilled. That's second meaning. Third meaning, the mind is very fickle, like a fish who goes this way and that. And so only after much meditation does Krishna's feet finally come into the heart. That's another meaning of the fish. And the meaning that's very relevant to this verse, Krishna's feet will come to live in one's heart only if the heart has been liquefied by soft, loving emotions. So it says here his heart became liquefied. It was like a lake. Here, tears were flowing and he was experiencing. So Krishna's feet will only live in such a heart. His feet do not thrive where it is dry. So this is the relevance of this verse and the mark of the fish on Krishna's lotus feet. So Krishna's lotus feet will only come in the heart when the heart has become like a lake of prema. And actually in the lake, what grows? What grows? Lotus. And Krishna sits on the lotus of the heart. That's described in many verses of Srimad Bhagavatam, that the yogis, the great yogis, they meditate on the lotus, and Krishna is sitting on the lotus of their hearts. The heart becomes like a lotus, then Krishna can sit there. So this is there's eight bodily transformations, Ashta Sattvika Vikar. This is described also 4th canto, 12th chapter, Dhruva Maharaj, he experienced this. And Prabhupada says that when you do deity worship, hearing, chanting, remembering, worshipping deity, actually devotional service, then these are the symptoms that will appear. This is nectar of devotion also. And the example is the coconut, which becomes completely dry in the shell. If you shake it, then you can hear it rattling. So this is when one is fully absorbed in service, you're disconnected from the subtle and the gross material body. So that's Jivan Mukta. So when you become disconnected to these two, where's the connection? Where are you connected to? Krishna, Yoga Yukta. Krishna, you're connected to Krishna in the heart. So that's where the real connection is. This is the meditation of the yogis and the devotees of Krishna in the heart. So he was experiencing this, Bharat Maharaj. He was seeing Krishna manifesting in his heart. So this is 4.12.18. And then also again, 4.29.63, Prabhupada again describes Ashta Sattvika Vikar, that how the subtle activities of the mind are expressed through the senses. So he says, the mind of a person in Krishna consciousness also acts in a similar way. The tongue chants Hare Krishna. The hands are raised in ecstasy and the legs dance. So these are symptoms of Sattvika Vikar. Ashta Sattvika Vikar. Eight symptoms. Verse 13. Mahaj Bharat appeared very beautiful. He had a wealth of curly hair in his head, which was wet from bathing three times daily. He dressed in a deer skin. He worshipped Lord Narayan, whose body was composed of golden effulgence and who resided within the sun. Mahaj Bharat worshipped Lord Narayan by chanting the hymns given in the Rig Veda, and he recited the following verse as the sun rose. So Prabhupada explains that the deity Narayan within the sun is worshipped by our Gayatri mantra. And I have here one book called The Gayatri Book. It's by Sachinandan Swami. It's quite an interesting book, and it goes through many, many interesting things. So today I just want to read one small meditation. Which, when we chant this, this is the first Gayatri mantra out of the seven which we have been given. The first Gayatri. And here it appears that Bharat Maharaj is chanting this first Gayatri mantra, as Prabhupada quotes in the purport. And here Prabhupada says he's meditating on Narayan within the sun planet. And here this is from Maharaj's book on Gayatri mantra. This is the meditation. Meditate on the divine sun of Krishna, sun S-U-N, which is rising and spreading light through the lower Bhu, upper Bhuvar, and higher Swar planetary systems. May that divine light also inspire and enlighten my own small universe, consisting of my body, mind, and intellect. 151, page 151 in Maharaj's book. So when we study the universe of in this fifth canto, we'll see how the greater universe of this material world is called the macrocosm, and our body is the microcosm. And actually the yogi knows how to connect the microcosm with the macrocosm. And who is the example of this, who actually connected? Yeah, Dhruva, he connected. And in the 11th canto, it describes how you can do that. Krishna explains to Uddhava how the yogi actually becomes greater than the greatest, smaller than the smallest. And all of these involve meditation on the Supreme Lord as greater than the greatest, smaller than the smallest. And then the yogi, he can get these mystic powers. So when we do our study on the fifth canto, in the structure of the universe, then we'll go into more detail about this and how the different chakras of the body correspond to the different planets, Bhu, Bhuvar, Swar, Mahar, Jana, Tapas, Satya, the seven chakras. They correspond. And then by the yogi bringing the life air up through these chakras, he goes out of the universe. And we'll describe the different ways of going out of the universe. That's one way. And there's other ways also. So when we get to that discussion on the structure, we'll get more involved in these things. But here we have a glimpse. We're getting a glimpse of this meditation here. Verse 14. This is his meditation. Pararajasa viturjata veda devasya bharga manaseram chajana sarita sara punaravisha chaste hangsang vijanam nisharingiram ima. Very similar to Gayatri. Supreme Personality of Godhead is situated in pure goodness. He illuminates the entire universe and bestows all benedictions upon his devotees. The Lord has created this universe from his own spiritual potency. According to his desire, the Lord entered this universe as Supasoul. And by virtue of his different potencies, he is maintaining all living entities desiring material enjoyment. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto the Lord, who is the giver of intelligence. So these are the meditations of his Gayatri mantra, and the Sanskrit is there on the board. You can also read it in your book, of how Bharga, self-effulgence, very similar to our Gayatri mantra. And he was also chanting Gayatri to meditate on the Supreme Lord in Pulaha Ashram. So in the second half of the purport, Srila Prabhupada says, in the Rig Veda, predominating deity of the sun is worshipped by this mantra. Jaya Sarasa Viti Mandala Madhyavarti Narayana Sarasa Sujasana Sannivishta. Narayana sits on his lotus flower within the sun. By reciting this mantra, every living entity should take shelter of Narayana just as the sun rises. According to modern scientists, the material world rests on the sun's effulgence. So see how Prabhupada, he's always taking the modern, and he's showing how it relates to our Vedic conception of the world. We say that the sun is nourishing everything, and they say, Prabhupada says, they also say the sun is nourishing everything. So when Sadaputta Prabhu does his presentation, that is where he's coming from. He's saying, we say, they say, there are a lot of similarities. So he's like pointing out the similarities between what we say and what they say. So Prabhupada also does that a lot. The material world rests on the sun's effulgence. Due to sunshine, all planets are rotating and vegetables are growing. We also have information, the moonshine helps vegetables and herbs grow. Actually, Narayan within the sun is maintaining the entire universe. So, but actually it's not as they say, it's not just the sun, it's Narayan in the sun. So we go a step further. They see the external, but we see the internal, what's going on. Who is actually maintaining the universe? It's Surya Narayan. So that there is a similarity on the external side there. So we have information, the moonshine helps vegetables and herbs grow. And the scientists may not know, but the farmers know. In fact, they used to have a farmer's almanac. It tells when is Purnima, even in the West. In the West they had that. The farmers know the relationship between the moon and growing vegetables. They know that. The farmer's almanac would tell all these things. That when to plant, when not to plant, getting the benefit of the moon. So Prabhupada says, we have this information. The moonshine helps vegetables and herbs grow. Actually, Narayan within the sun is maintaining the entire universe. Therefore, Narayan should be worshipped by Gayatri Mantra or Rig Mantra. Actually, it's all personal. There's a person behind everything in the universe. They just see, they cannot see the person, so they only see the external, so that's how they make their judgments. But we see here, it's actually personal. There's a person behind it who is maintaining. So what is the name of the Lord who is in the heart? Antaryami, that's not his name. That's kind of what he does. He's kind of all pervading. There's one of the, we learned in Lord Shiva's prayers, the one who is in the heart and who is the sun god, the moon god, they're all his expansions. Remember which one? Sankarshan of Vasudev, Sankarshan, Pradyumna, Aniruddha. Aniruddha, yes. And I'll sing the prayer of Lord Shiva, which refers to him. It's 424-36. 424-36. Namo namo Aniruddhaya Rishikeshan Vyatmane Namo Paramahamsaya Purnaya Nipritatmane. Aniruddha is a sun god by virtue of, this is a purport, Prabhupada says, Aniruddha is a sun god by virtue of his expansions. Since the predominating deity of sun is expansion of Lord Aniruddha, Lord Shiva also prays to the sun god in this verse. So Prabhupada says, Lord Krishna, by his quadruple expansion, Vasudev, Sankarshan, Pradyumna, Aniruddha is the Lord of psychic action, thinking, feeling, willing, and acting. Lord Shiva prays to Lord Aniruddha as sun god, controlling deity of the external material elements, which constitute construction of the material body. So there's different in the Sanskrit, there's four terms which describe the sun god. Paramahansa, no, there's three terms. Paramahansa, Purna, and Nibritatmane. Nibritatmane. This is in the 424-36. Why is the sun? Nibritatmane means he manipulates the rainfall. So we know, how does the sun manipulate the rainfall? By evaporating the water, and then it becomes clouds, and then the rain comes. So he's Nibritatmane. Then he's Purna. How is the sun Purna? He's complete. The sun is complete. No, that's Nibritatmane. Yes, non-stop. Non-stop since beginning of creation. The sun is going, no end, millions and millions of years. Purna. Prabhupada says, since the creation, he's been supplying heat and light without diminution. And then the last word of the sun, very important for us, Paramahansa. He's Paramahansa. Another name for the sun god. Paramahansa. Anyway, this is quite complicated. This is persons who are completely cleansed. Prabhupada says, when there is sufficient sunshine, the mind remains clear and transparent. In other words, the sun god helps the mind of the living entity become situated on the platform of Paramahansa. Isn't that nice? So Lord Shiva prays to Aniruddha to be kind upon him, so his mind will always be in the perfect state of cleanliness and engaged in devotional service of the Lord. So we have enough sun over here. So we're very fortunate in India. Yes, Prabhupada said that's hell when you don't have sun. He said, London is hell. No sunlight. Always cloudy. Just as fire sterilizes all unclean things, the sun god keeps everything sterilized, especially dirty things within the mind, thus enabling one to attain elevation to the platform of spiritual understanding. So now we have a complete understanding of who he's worshipping. He's worshipping the Lord, Surya Narayan. Yeah, all 424 and 36. That's that, in that purport. So you can read that. We'll stop here. Any questions or comments? They worship different incarnations.
They worship different incarnations, and these are
Archivigraha. Archivigraha, yes.
I was looking for the reference. Did you have
it? Yeah, I don't have it right. When we get through that section, then I'll find it. And there was one I specifically remembered, that the Didi was made of iron. It's Didi made of... Somewhere in the purport. I think it's the purport. Because it seems like a real direct reference, not an indirect reference. That's Archivigraha. I'll have to... Yeah, when we get there, then we'll... Let's look for it. Keep our ears open, our eyes open.
Yeah,
our ears open. Yeah. Somewhere in... Yeah, I thought it was very... It struck me. That's why I remembered it. Interesting point, how they're worshipping Archivigraha in the nine varshas. 517, 14. Okay. I don't have it in my book.
That's in the descendant of Vivekananda.
Well, that's the prayers of... But... Isn't it, that begins the prayers of Jambudvip there, or is it still in Ganga?
It's
right before the prayers. Okay, what does it say?
It says, to show mercy to his devotees in each of these nine tracts of land, the Supreme Personality of Godhead known as Narayan expands himself in these horrible principles of auspicious impression under Narayana. In this way, he remains near his devotees to accept their service. And the Purple Prabhupada says, in this connection,
Vishnu Chakravarti
informs us that the demigods worship the Supreme Lord in his various deity forms.
Yeah.
Because except in the spiritual world, the Supreme Personality of God cannot be directly worshipped in person.
So only in the spiritual world can you worship in person. But here he's in the deity form in the material world. What was the connection? What word did you type in?
I just selected the chapters of the prayers and typed in Archa.
Archa. Yeah, Archa.
It's before.
It's in that section. The whole section is on from chapter 16 through chapter 19. It's all Jambudvip. 16 is the geography of Jambudvip, and then 17 gets into details of the different varshas. Awesome. Yeah, we'll be hearing about it next week, actually after next week, because we're going to have a special class next Thursday on the structure of the universe and arguments and counter-arguments and those kind of things. Yes?
About Aniruddha, in the fourth canto, we learned that he's the deity of the mind.
Deity of the mind, yes.
But in Chaitanya Charitamrita, says that Sankarsana is the total living entities, and then Pradyumna, the mind, and Aniruddha is the ego. And so different places say different.
Yeah, they say different things. Yes?
So this is only one discrepancy.
There's only one, yeah.
Moksha Dharma is coming from Mahabharata.
Mahabharata, okay.
The other way around.
Yes. Okay, so so the general principle is that Pradyumna is intelligence and Aniruddha is the mind. So sometimes, of course, in the other scriptures you'll find, but Srimad Bhagavatam is the highest pramana, Amala Purana, so it's the highest pramana. So if you find discrepancies, we should accept Bhagavatam as the highest evidence. Even if it's in, like that one is from Mahabharata. So it's quoted by Prabhupada, but we should keep the general principles in mind.
Sankarsana is in charge of false ego?
Oh yes, Sankarsana.
Pradyumna intelligence.
Intelligence.
And
Aniruddha mind. And Vasudeva is consciousness. Consciousness. Sankarsana definitely, we'll hear a lot about Sankarsana in this canto. We've already, and also in the 17th chapter, Lord Shiva, again, will worship Sankarsana. And so we don't forget that he's in charge of false ego. He can untie the knot. What is that? He's in charge of integration and disintegration. Sankarsan. So he helps in the creation, he helps in the destruction. So the destruction is actually of our false ego. And so we pray to Sankarsan. I think Lord Shiva will pray for that, that you please destroy my false ego. I have a really big false ego. In fact, he's in charge of false ego, Lord Shiva. So you please destroy my false ego and cut this. So he's showing us how to pray. Lord Shiva worships Sankarsan in Ilavritavarsh. In the middle of Jambudvipa is Ilavritavarsh, and Lord Shiva is worshipping Sankarsan there. Okay? Any other questions or comments? Yes? Yes. Yes. Nityananda is the original form of Sankarsan. Yeah, of course. This is of this higher tattva we'll hear in Chaitanya Charitamrita. And Nityananda, he is the origin of everything. And Advaita is the origin of Shiva and Mahavishnu. Advaita. So the origin is, of course, Nityananda. And he appears in these different forms within the material, his expansions, Sankarsan and so on, Lord Shiva, whatever. These are expansions of Nityananda. Lord Shiva is not mentioned as expansion. He's Advaita. Expansion of Advaita. Yes?
Rarity. Devotional service.
Okay.
Okay, we can understand that Krishna may be reluctant. But the other part, the other reason why it's rare, that
right.
One has to be attached.
One has to be attached to Krishna.
So isn't that a rather high level of advancement already?
Yeah, it's very high level. That's why it's rare. It's very rare. So it's a very high level of devotional service to be attached to Krishna. So that's why one reason is very rare. Very few attain that level. Many may perform the rituals, but few may become attached to Krishna. So what's the question?
It seems like it's almost our goal, but from this verse, it appears that this is a reason, cause of it.
Yeah. Oh, how can something that is our goal to become attached to Krishna be a reason for attaining a way of attaining the goal? One of the steps. Well, one of the answers I can give you is right from Bhagavad Gita. There's a verse that explains the whole process, actually, from almost from Shada to Asakti. You know that verse? In the Gita, yeah. And Prabhupada in the purport, he says, Adau Shadha, Tato Bhajana Kriya. There's a verse. No. There's a verse. And in that verse, you'll see Anartha Nivritti, you will see Asakti, you will see. Not that one. Yes. Maya sakta manaparta yoga ninja marashaya asamshayam samagramam itagyasasitachanu. So Prabhupada in his lecture in that verse, first he brought in the last one in chapter 6, Shraddha, that you worship me with faith. And then he went into this verse and he explained that this shows hearing and chanting marashaya sarusanga. Nartanavriti Asamshayam Samagramam. That means Anartanavriti, then Nishta, and then Asati, Maya Asati. So it is possible. We get this Asati, and this is what the beginning of the middle six verses of Bhagavad Gita are teaching, pure devotional service. So the first verse in that section starts Maya Asapta. That's Asati. And Prabhupada said this is Asati. And then the process is given in that verse how to attain Asati. And so it's not simply, it's not that high. It's actually, it's attainable. And the way is, because actually it is very high in one sense, but what is the benediction for us is that we have the mercy of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Even we're not attached, he forces us, he pulls us. There was a verse somebody quoted the other day about how if you worship Krishna's lotus feet and you have mixtures of jnana and karma, then he forcibly takes you, even though you're unwilling. Maharaj was here. Yeah, he forcibly takes you to his lotus feet. And the Diti also, the Diti. You just go in there, you're innocent, you're just like a third-class devotee, you came to bring your flowers. And then you see the Diti, and immediately your mind is gone. Wow. He says, look at that. I go in there. I was taking darshan and one day, and because I know a little Hindi, and I understood what the people were saying, and these people are just walking off, and they're saying, wow, so beautiful, this is a decoration. Can you see that Diti? Do you ever see this anywhere? You know, they're like talking like that. People off, you know, coming. And so Prabhupada, there's that, again, we bring to that verse about the Diti, which I wish Maharaj was here, he could quote it for us, that you lose, when you see the Diti, then you lose all your perception of the outside world, you forget everything. And even despite your unwillingness, Krishna takes you to him. So this attraction, we develop just even within our sadhana bhakti, that attraction is there. We do feel that sometimes. We have that taste. Krishna gives us that taste. So I would say not only is it a goal, but it's also a step on the path. And it's very accessible. And our only qualification is that we're born at the right time, at the right moment. We got the Prabhupada. And it's Lord Chaitanya's move. It's Lord Chaitanya's come and he's given us that mercy. That what does it say in Nectar Devotion? The quality of Krishna is magnanimous. I think it's magnanimous. And he says that Krishna is so magnanimous that he gives himself to his devotee. And then Prabhupada says, and Lord Chaitanya is so magnanimous, he gives himself to the non-devotees. So that's, we get the taste, we have the taste that Prabhupada, we're getting through Parampara from Srila Prabhupada, direct connection with Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Panchatattva. So therefore we can go Maya Sakta, as Prabhupada says in that lecture. You read this lecture, I can't remember, Geneva maybe, or somewhere. He lectures on that. He made many, many lectures he did on that particular verse. But in one of the lectures, he showed how it was the process from Shraddha to Prema. And in the verse purport, he also quotes that verse, Shraddha to Prema, Adau Shraddha, Ata Sadhu Sangha. So anyway, you can study that and then reach your conclusions.
Which verse were you referring to?
Nectar of Devotion.
Because when you say the goal of some magnetism, we are referring to which verse?
Nectar of Devotion.
Which verse?
I don't know. I don't know Nectar. You know that?
No, but you said five. I'm on chapter
five. Oh, that one I have here. Okay. Oh, yeah, I know. That was the question.
When you started out the question,
that was the verse.
We're referring to the verse 135.
Yes.
That deals with the six symptoms of,
yes,
connecting.
Yes. So in the verse, I brought it up in the beginning of class, that what are the two reasons why devotional service is rare? So he was picking up on, well, how can you be attached to Krishna? We don't have attachment. But we get it through the pure devotee. We were attached to Prabhupada, and because Prabhupada was attached to Krishna, we were attached to Krishna. We got it. We felt attached. I was doing deity worship. Two years ago, I didn't know Krishna. And here I'm attached to Krishna, the deity. For some reason or other, I don't know why. I'm chanting and I'm following what Prabhupada said, and then I got attached to the deities. And cause us attachment. Yeah. Any attachment.
To Krishna, motives.
Yes, any attachment. You just wait till seventh canto. You'll understand. Prabhupada says karma, dvesha, envy, lust, anger, any attachment is good. And Prabhupada says, yes, those who blaspheme Krishna in one purport in seventh canto. I was shocked, you know, when I read this purport. First he says, you know, if someone blasphemes Krishna, then he quotes apichet saracharo, even if he performs the most abominable action, at least it's Krishna. And then he says, they've got some attachment to Krishna because they're blaspheming Krishna. They're giving some attention to Krishna. So Prabhupada says, yes, next life they'll be born as a dog or a hog in some abominable species. He said, and then they'll go back to Godhead. You hear that about Vrindavan, of course. But Prabhupada, he was seeming to make a general statement there in the purport. He didn't mention Vrindavan. I thought it was quite interesting. We're going to expand our consciousness quite a bit, our vision of who is a devotee. And Krishna's mercy is so expanded. So how does Krishna see his devotees and see people who blaspheme? Krishna's happy because at least they're saying his name. Krishna, Krishna. Okay, she's saying the point they're making in Nectar Devotion, that point where you need attachment, is that it should not be done simply as a matter of duty. Routine. Matter of routine. So it's not mechanical, it's not a routine, but of course in the beginning it might have to be a little bit, that you just do your duty. So in order to achieve bhava, all the items of sadhana bhakti have to be performed with feeling. And that was the point that they're making, that pure devotional service is rare. Okay, so this manmana bhavabhakto, he's actually consciously thinking of Krishna. Manmana, not simply doing the rituals. We have our rituals, we have our daily duties. But do we think of Krishna while we do our duties? How often do we think of Krishna? And this is for the pleasure of Krishna, or pleasure of Guru even. Pleasure of Guru, pleasure of Krishna. No, this is the point. How rare is that soul who is actually thinking of me? Yeah.
It doesn't speak about Raganuga.
Doesn't speak about Raganuga. It's not referring. Both are there. General principle, it's not Raganuga. It's a general principle. That's good, we have our Nectar of Devotion teacher here. Yes?
That verse talks about by association you can get real devotional
service. By which? By association?
You can get real
devotional service. Satam prasangam mama virya samvido. Yes. So, in the association of devotees, then the discussions are very powerful.
This is
Bhava Bhakti verse.
Describe
Bhava Bhakti. Satam Prasangam, Amaviri Sampada. Bhava Bhakti. So we're doing it, but everyone has a different level of consciousness. Some may be here in Bhava and Prema, and some may be just Sarasanga and Arta Nivritti. So according to our levels, we can all participate in this discussion. Okay, anybody else? Any other comments or questions on these verses? No. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.